Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to episode 9 of the Red and White Chalkboard podcast. So on today's episode, we touched on the major points that's been happening recently in football. We've covered Trent probably, most definitely, moving to Real Madrid. We covered a Jadon Sancho, freedom fighter. Where is he going to be this time next year? Will it be Manchester United? Will it be Chelsea? Will it be somewhere else? Don't care as long as it's not Manchester United. We then went on to touch on Thiago Motta and the recent sacking that he's experienced at Juventus before touching and finishing on the upcoming FA Cup fixtures. So we hope you enjoy the episode and we'll see you on the other side. Enjoy. All right then, let's start off with probably the biggest news of the week. Trent Alexander-Arnold has come out that he is close to agreeing a pre-contract agreement to sign for Real Madrid on a free transfer this summer. Cormac, thoughts on that? What's your general thoughts on the whole situation and what Liverpool fans are thinking?
Well, I think I can understand Liverpool fans' frustration, which is kind of the main thing that I've been seeing online. Obviously, I mean, you know, Twitter, you get idiots on there, you know, rat emojis here, rat emojis there. But I think the whole situation really is a complete mismanagement from Liverpool. I think they've got a generational right back there who is Scouse, is, you know, in his prime now, and they're letting him go for, not just leaving in his prime, but they're letting him go on for a free, I think is a complete cock-up on their end. I mean, obviously, we won't talk about it too much today, but the Van Dijk and Salah situation as well, them still being out of contract in the summer. If two of the three go, it's a complete disaster. The fact that they've already got Trent, who arguably is, you know, because he is Scouse, because he is from there, it's an absolute cock-up from them. In terms of kind of Trent, the man himself, good on him. I think it's an extremely exciting move. To have two English players, by the way, potentially starting in that Real Madrid side is awesome. I think it's so exciting. I think he'll be amazing for them over there. I think it's a great opportunity for him to experience what it's like to be a Real Madrid player and kind of, you know, the pressures and the you know, the credit and the kind of everything that comes with that. I think it's great for him to come into that team at that time. You know, they're still quite a young, exciting team. They've got Vinicius, obviously Bellingham, Rodrigo, Tchouameni, just so many kind of exciting young players. I think it makes so much sense for him to go over there. And on top of all that, he's getting a fat signing fee, which Real Madrid obviously do give to him. And I've seen people kind of, you know, say, oh, why are they doing this? They shouldn't be allowed to do that. It's just the way the football works, and they're using that system, and that's what's allowed to sign them maybe the greatest right-back in the world and potentially the greatest player in the world, even Mbappe last season. So I think, to quickly summarise that, cock-up from Liverpool. I think that is a real mismanagement, and I understand why Liverpool fans are pissed off, but they shouldn't be pissed off at Trent. I think they should be pissed off at the club more than anything else.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with everything you just said. I think for Liverpool to let their three best players go down to the final year of the contract in the same season is extraordinary. Players are so smart nowadays, or they're so, well, maybe they're not so smart, but they're so well informed, and they know that signing contracts when they already have 2 or 3 years left is not maximising their potential. This contract for Trent now is it was either going to make him probably the best pay player at Liverpool, or he's going to be able to experience something completely brand new. I think obviously he's looking at it through the lens that he's going to probably win the Premier League. He's won Champions League, he's won the FA Cup, he's won everything he needs to win at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. But I think obviously what you said, what burns the most is free transfer. No
brutal,
pay for
that,
him.
Isn't it?
That's brutal. And he is someone, if 26 years old, he's probably worth, if he had a 5-year contract or a 4-year contract, you're maybe putting a value of about 60 to 70 million on him.
That's what I had in my head as well, yeah.
Yeah, and you're not getting any of that. And not only, the hardest thing for Liverpool now is to replace that, because obviously then they're all going to start screaming, oh, but we've got Conor Bradley. But yeah, and I agree, I think Conor Bradley is a fine player.
Yeah, he's a great player.
But Trent is a unique player. There's not many players that can deliver what he's delivered in the past season. So, I mean, you've got some great stats lined up for just how much of a creative force he's been for that Liverpool side and how difficult that's going to be to replicate. Go on, hit us with a stat.
Well, only Kevin De Bruyne has created more chance since Trent made his Premier League debut, which is, you know, I mean, it's going to show some things on the screen now if you are watching. But kind of in terms of assists, only Salah and De Bruyne has got more. And Heung-Min Son, sorry, I forgot about that. But he has the third most chances created since 18-19. He's sixth on chances created from open play. He's third on chances created from set plays. He's seventh on through balls played. And he's third on assists since the start of the 18-19 season. All of that there. So it just shows what a creative force he is. And what a creative force Liverpool are going to miss. You know, because so much has come from that right-hand side. Obviously, I think it's got quite lazy to kind of be like, oh, but he can't defend. And I think people kind of overflate that a little bit.
I think he can defend, because you can't play right-back in a top Premier League team without some level of competent defending. Obviously, I don't think he's the best defender, but what he is the best at is chance creation. And he has, in the last few years, he has revolutionised the right-back role. We look at that role now completely different across Europe as a result of him coming through to Liverpool and providing so much creativity from a place which was typically, you know, you would just have your steady men who were able to defend well, get forward if needed. And he's come in and changed the game for right-backs. And now the general mould now is to try and create a right-back who can be comfortable enough to then float into the midfield, bust down the wing, put the ball into the box. But he's just so good at it that there's not many other players in the top five leagues in Europe who have been able to replicate him from that right-back position. You know, just comparing him to what I have to see at Manchester United, where I watched Diogo Dalot, he's nowhere near as competent as Trent is at whipping the ball in, set pieces, eye for the pass, over the top. He's got every type of pass in his repertoire, and there's not many midfielders out there with his passing range and his style of play, let alone a right back. So again, it begs the question now, so what do Liverpool do with that gap? Do they almost try and find someone who's as replicable as Trent, or does this give Arne Slot maybe a chance to restructure how the team works? At the minute, you have to play Trent there because he's one of your better players, and that you can't do much about it. But obviously him leaving opens up the door for them to maybe change how they play next season. So it'll be interesting to see who they do buy. But I think from Liverpool's perspective, it's not ideal. And Real Madrid are getting one hell of a player on a free transfer, which is just something they've, since that season where they bought Hazard, I think they've had a net spend of 1 million. Euros in that, and they've managed to sign Bellingham for a huge fee. They've managed to sign Mbappe. They've managed to sign Camavinga, Tchouameni, all these wonderful players. Rudiger on a free transfer, bargain. Yeah. Now Trent on a free transfer. All their players that they scouted from Brazil a couple of years ago, Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo, have turned into. How often do you see it that teams will go, Chelsea doing it now, they're buying all these young players, but the hit rate on them is just not you don't see the level of hit rate that Real Madrid have had from their from their plucks almost from South America. Their business is so clever. I don't know how they do it. They must just have crazy sorcery behind them because they just keep doing it. And it's a case of if you've won everything, there's not many more. It's not much more of a pinnacle in football, I can imagine. But playing for Real Madrid, going for the Champions League, that's what their idea is. They obviously, if you have the same squad over and over again, and they keep winning Champions Leagues like Real Madrid do, you need to refresh it with these players who want to come in and win more Champions Leagues. That's how you keep winning more and keep that fire alive, because you'll have the senior players who have the 4 or 5 behind them, and then you'll bring in the ones who maybe have won one, maybe need their first one, like Mbappe, for example. Bellingham now obviously has one. So their overall transfer strategy, it's just, it's one for one. It's bang on. And I think bringing in Trent, it'll be interesting to see, to slightly move on from the Liverpool spectrum a bit, who Real Madrid go for at centre-back in the summer. I was seeing some links that maybe Romero from Tottenham, although he's also linked to Atletico Madrid. And let it be said out loud, Cristiano Romero and Atletico Madrid makes more
match
sense
made in
than
heaven.
Any... I've never heard anything that's made more sense to me in my whole life than...
I think it makes sense for everyone as well.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And there was also the Dean Huijsen, is how I'm going to go for his name, the Bournemouth player. His dad actually reposted on Instagram the Madrid local newspaper, I think it's Diaz, I think? I'm not sure on the name. But they had a front cover story about how he has this 50 million euro or pound release clause, and Real Madrid are interested in buying, and his own dad put it on the story. So if Real Madrid end up going to buy him, and then, you know, such a solid defender, so young, and then we'll also have Rudiger, we'll also have Alaba, and whoever else they just happen to have fantastic to play centre back. They're just building a tiny squad.
I know. Just really quick, going back to Trent then. Obviously, you made a good point earlier. He has won everything at Liverpool, so he's going to have potentially what looks like 2 Premier Leagues. He's going to have a Champions League. He's got an FA Cup. He's got a Carabao Cup. He's got everything. There's a lot of obsession over legacy in football, and I think it's especially a big thing at Man United, at your Liverpools, when there's a local person who's come up from the academy and made it in the club. Obviously, Steve McManaman did a similar thing at Liverpool, where he was a scout bloke who ended up leaving Liverpool, go to Madrid, and...
Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
He is not looked at particularly fondly, if you know, by Liverpool fans at all. What do you think the legacy, you know, which I think is kind of bullshit anyway, but what do you think that legacy is going to be of Trent at Liverpool? Are they going to love him forever, or is this going to be a kind of brutal breakup, which probably looks like it's going to be?
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because it's real. The pain is real. You can feel... Mm-hmm. It's almost like betrayal, isn't it? Because you put... Us fans, when we have a young guy that comes through and makes it and is part of the first team, you almost feel like you know him, because it's part of the beauty of football. So then to see them go on to then leave, to then... If they're leaving for better things, which in this case... The idea for Trent is, yes, he's probably leaving for better things. He's going to Real Madrid, one of the biggest clubs in the world. Completely different lifestyle, set of circumstances. It's like the ultimate betrayal, isn't it? So that really stings. But I think time's going to be the healer for this one. And in due course, I think Liverpool have enjoyed their most successful period. if whatever happens next, if, for example, Liverpool now don't win anything for 4 years, people are going to look at Trent much more favourably than if Liverpool continue, say, go on to win another Champions League or win a couple more Premier Leagues. It could swing either way, and either way could actually benefit Trent. I think he just needs to stay away, probably not go back to Liverpool for a while. But I get it. I can imagine it feels painful, but also me not being a Liverpool fan, I'm just like, why wouldn't you go to Real Madrid? That sounds awesome.
I know, that's it. I mean, Real Madrid, I think pretty objectively, as a broad statement, everyone can say, is the biggest club in the world. And they are consistently winning everything. Sorry, Man United, by the way. I saw the look in your eye there. I know what you're thinking. I think Real Madrid definitely are the biggest club in the world. I think from Liverpool, the only real step up probably is Real Madrid. And again, he has won everything. It's like if Saka went to Real Madrid, I'd be devastated. And I kind of get it. But also, I'm like, yeah, well, you know what, fair enough, good on him. If you really care, you want these guys to go on and just have a good career, I think. Maybe that's because I'm not a fucking loser weirdo who
I agree. I'm
too personally to it, but
I think in this case as well, it's double-edged sword. If he's won everything, which he's obviously probably going to, then it's almost, I feel like that could be embraced a bit more. For example, if Saka was to leave now, but you guys are on the cusp of doing something great, you guys haven't got the trophies yet, but you're almost there. It's in the sights. That would be so painful because that would put you back and you're probably not going to achieve what you could have had you kept him. But they've achieved. They've done what they would have wanted with him in the side. I do believe probably the most painful bit is the fact he's leaving for free. That is hilarious. Well,
that is so funny. It's, like I said, a complete cock-up for Liverpool, but it is just bad, isn't it? It's a real mismanagement there.
Football's a short, you know, these football players, it's a short career. They have 10, 12 years at the top. And firstly, you have to maximise your monetary gain from that because revenue streams, as soon as you retire, as soon as you reach that 33, 34, 35, you're not getting contract anymore.
You're a serious injury away from losing all your revenue, you've got to
maximise it. This is 26. It's going to be the next contract. This contract now going to take him to his 30s. You know, if he has 4 years in Madrid, then he wants to come back to Liverpool for 2 years or whatever. There's always going to probably be an avenue of some sorts available to him. But this is a sliding doors moment. If he does sign that contract at Liverpool, then Real Madrid never come calling. And then this isn't even a discussion point. But he hasn't. He's ran down and his options are open. And, you know, why not? It's an experience. He'll get paid very well. He'll get the signing on fee. Yep. And he'll get a once-in-a-lifetime experience because Real Madrid aren't going to get him when he's 30 when his next contract runs out. So it's almost now or never. So, it's tough, but it's understandable.
I completely agree. Right, going from an English right-back then, moving on to another man who's been in the news this year, to an English left midfielder. Yeah, I think he plays on the left. I'll just throw that out.
Who knows
if he plays. Jadon Sancho has been in the news. It looks like he's going to go back to Man United in the summer. Chelsea don't want him. It's not been a success there at all. Obviously, it hasn't been a success at Man United as well. We haven't seen his best since he was really at Dortmund. Taylor, I know you've got some strong feelings on all of this.
I'm going to myth bust. I'm absolutely going to myth bust Jadon Sancho through the door. So, firstly, freedom fighter Jadon Sancho. News this week has come out that the important fee that Chelsea could pay Manchester United to not buy Jadon Sancho, which everyone was probably thinking was around, the obligation is 25. So everyone's thinking probably 20, probably 15. It's come out and it's 5 million, which is not a grand sum at all, especially the level Jadon Sancho has been performing at. It's more like a glorified loan fee than an important fee to turn back on the agreed deal. So that £5 million has been announced. And obviously now everyone's flooding saying, well, of course Chelsea are going to pay it. Why would they keep him? He's not been particularly great. He hasn't been great at all. I want to myth bust this idea that he even started well. I think he...
Well, he had... played devil's initially. He had a few moments. Like I said, very briefly.
But that's all he is. He is simply a moments player. And I think even... And I'm going to myth bust him even further because when he went to Dortmund last year on loan, everyone was saying, oh, Jadon Sancho, he's got Champions League final, he's got... No, he was absolutely bang averagely okay. He was nothing more, nothing less. And I'm sure, because no one watches the Bundesliga in the UK, he was out of sight, out of mind. So everyone's just seeing it from a holistic point of view. And holistically, he got to a Champions League final, must be a success. Brilliant. Manchester United benefited from it because the clauses we had in the loan contract stipulated that if Dortmund went far in the Champions League, we would get more money. So actually, it worked out to be a good deal for us. But he actually didn't perform well. There is a good reason why Dortmund didn't buy him back in the summer. They could have.
Yeah.
They could have. We held on to Jadon Sancho right until the end, until obviously Chelsea took him off our hands. And I just thought, absolutely brilliant, because Chelsea fans were just up in arms saying, oh yeah, we've got Jadon Sancho from you, this is brilliant. No, and I was just thinking, lol, this is going to be hilarious to watch, because I've watched Jadon Sancho play football for the past 2.5 seasons. Unless he was in the mountains in the Netherlands because Ten Hag banished him to go work on himself. He was absolutely dreadful. There's a couple of things which makes Jadon Sancho not equipped to play in the Premier League. He is not quick, so he's unable to beat his man. And that is so important, especially in the wing areas, to be able to get past your man and on the fast break, which is what Chelsea like to play at the beginning. And that's what they were playing at the beginning of the season when he did get a couple of assists because he was higher at the pitch and he was able to thread in those passes behind. But he's not quick enough to turn his man. He's so prone to the safe pass back rather than thinking forward. He doesn't contribute enough goals and assists for someone who has cost as much and gets paid as much as he does. He doesn't have the physicality. He doesn't have... He just doesn't have the cojones to be a top Premier League. He hasn't got the mentality, I believe. I think all the issues that he had at Manchester, he was frequently late. He got, you know, sent away by Ten Hag. He obviously, they had a huge argument. And the reason why he did get banished was because he refused to apologise to Ten Hag. And I think, to me, you know, we both work, that's not something you could even contemplate, because that it's just how the world works. Even if you don't agree with something, you got to know your place, and he's your manager and he refused to apologise, and everyone has a different opinion on it, but I think ultimately he should have mentally got over that hurdle. Did not. Has gone to Chelsea, and turn of the year has been mid. And I'd even say below mid, because he's really not contributed any goals and assists. So now everyone is saying he's going to probably return to Manchester United. News has come out in the past 2 days, actually, from some sources in the UK, Sky Sports, etc., saying Chelsea do intend to keep him. And my logic behind that is that they probably think they could buy him for 25 mil, which is to be agreed, and then we'll probably try to shift him, because then reports have come out from Germany that Jadon Sancho has put in a request to his agent to try and source a move back to Dortmund this summer. He wants to go back to the Bundesliga. It's where he feels most comfortable. It's what suits him the best, and he's not going to be under the sheer scrutiny that he is under here, because everyone can see how shit he is in the broad light of day here every weekend, whereas in Germany it's very much out of sight, out of mind, like I mentioned earlier. So I just think, from a personal point of view, what must he be thinking? Because it hasn't worked in Manchester United, and he kicked up such a fuss. He costs so much money, he gets paid so well, and then he's gone off to Dortmund. Obviously he's done okay. And now he's gone to Chelsea, and he's barely done anything there. And now, instead of everyone saying, oh, what a bargain, you paid 25 million for Sancho, that's a great deal, well done, Chelsea, everyone's saying, lol, it's only 5 million to send him back. That's probably the easiest decision ever. And from his point of view, hearing that, he must just think, God, where has it all gone wrong? He is so far removed from the kid, age 19, who was assist machine, a creative machine, and he has just completely and utterly fell off. And I do think it's a mixture of his physicality peaked very young, and then I think mentally he withdrew into himself, because that fearless style that you saw when he was much younger, you watch him now and he's very safe and he's very risk averse. So he's a shadow of the player, and all I hope is that he stays so far away from Manchester United. There's not a spot in one of Ruben Amorim's number 10 positions for Jadon Sancho. There's not a spot for him anywhere. It's a non-issue. It's a non-starter. He's not coming back. He will stay at Chelsea. And if anything, Chelsea will just sell him for 30 mil and bank 5 million profit, because that's just... they just seem good at that. So,
yeah.
Well done. Well done, the Freedom Fighter. Any thoughts on Jadon Sancho after all my ramblings?
I think I need to take a breath after that. Christ. I think you hit a lot of the nails on the head there. Obviously, he had disciplinary issues at Man United. He had some of them at Dortmund. He had them at City when he was the academy there. So he's always clearly been in trouble, let's say, at certain times with a lot of different coaches. To play devil's advocate really quickly, and like you said, he has had moments at Chelsea. Maresca hasn't been able to get the best out of Sancho, Nkunku, Madueke's kind of fallen a bit flat. Neto doesn't look like the player people thought he was going to be when he was at Wolves. Is some of this a coaching issue as well? Obviously, I mean, Ten Hag struggled and obviously got sacked at United. So is there a coaching issue involved at all, do you think? Or is this, can you, this 100% be put on the man, Jadon Sancho?
No, I'm not going to blame the managers for Sancho. You have to have a certain level of self-discipline and self-wanting to bust through, to be the best players. You have to be the best at everything you do. And yeah. From what I've heard, it doesn't seem like he lives the lifestyle of someone who wants to be the best footballer he could be. I think he got a lot young, and it was, you know, to his credit, he was one of those who moved away very... He almost was that pioneer.
He was kind of a pioneer, wasn't he? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he was moving out to Europe so young, and it's inspired so many other English players since to go out and seek that move for first-team football, and it worked so well for him. But I think as he's gone older, he's just never pushed on. I think ultimately you've got to really put it down to the player. You get paid very well. You have been given ample opportunity. Ample hands have been stretched out to you. And, you know, I look at it and you've got Rashford over at Villa. You've got Sancho over at Chelsea. And I don't think either of them has scored since the turn of the year. So it's just weird how the narrative spins, though. But everyone...
Yeah. I mean, I think it's harsh to put Rashford in that same bracket there as Sancho.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just using them both as examples of very well-paid Manchester United players who are currently out on loan in the Premier League.
Some might say it's a United problem, eh?
Well, I mean, well, that's my point, though, is that since the turn of the year, they haven't scored at their new respective clubs. So
yeah, well, where do they become rotten, though?
Well, that's true. That's true. So
I'm just being a dickhead here for the sake of it.
No, it's true, though. It's a multifaceted issue, and you can look at it through... And lots of people will look at it through different lenses. But holistically, essentially, a player, like we said with Trent, a player's career is short, and the overall onus is on yourself to make the most of it.
Yeah. No, bang on. I agree. I do feel bad for him, though. Only 24 still. And, you know, because he was such an exciting prospect, wasn't he? Was it 72 million Man United paid for him?
72. Dortmund wanted 106 million the year before.
Fuck, oh, God, man. I'm not surprised they should have got that. More Man United transfer business going well.
All right, so I think I'm going to move on from Sancho, Freedom Fighter talk now, and I'm going to ask you what's your thoughts on Zubimendi apparently agreeing or maybe on the edge of completing a move to Real Madrid rather than Arsenal, which was originally reported back in the January transfer window. The Athletic reporting in January that Arsenal had almost agreed the deal for Martin Zubimendi, and then various reports now coming out of Spain that, in fact, Real Madrid are now tabling that €50 million offer for him. And I just want to get your thoughts on whether you think that are Arsenal really missing out, and if there's any better options of spending €50 million rather than going for Zubimendi, or do you think that he was the guy and that you guys are missing out incredibly?
It's a rather leading question there, Taylor. I'm going to have to ask you to watch yourself. But you do raise a fair point. I think there's no doubt that he is a quality player and arguably one of the kind of best defensive midfielders in Europe at the moment. It's definitely kind of a hot prospect. I mean, is he 25, I want to say? 24, 25, maybe even 26. So he's not young, but he is. He has been linked away for Liverpool for years and what have you. Obviously, Arsenal transfer kind of what we need. Striker, as has been said by everyone all the time, every day, has to be number one priority going into the summer. And that is going to probably end up being about 100 odd million on a player, or thereabouts at least. So I think I can understand maybe going, oh, hang on a second, we don't need to spend 50 million on a midfielder. That being said, I think we definitely do need a new kind of defensive line midfield, as it does look like Partey's going to be on his way out, thank God. It looks like Jorginho is probably on his way out. So there is going to need to be someone who can come in and play there. And Zubimendi would have probably been perfect for that. Again, these reports for Real Madrid are rumours. Nothing there really confirmed yet. I mean, Real Madrid are going to throw the hat in absolutely everything. And if he does have the option of Arsenal and Real Madrid, if he went to Madrid, he'd be like, fucking fair play. Can't really blame the bloke. I think, like I said, I think we probably need striker's number one priority for us. Then I'd probably say cover for Saka on the right. And then I'd probably say midfielder. In that order. I'd maybe even another left winger as well. Those are going to be kind of the main positions that we need. So that altogether there, if you're buying, you know, title challenging quality players in each of those positions,
like Isak,
God, sorry Newcastle, that's going to be, you know, 300 400 million you're looking at spend there, just on four or five players. I'm probably being a bit dramatic, but to summarize again all that, I've kind of waffled a bit there. I think it is a shame not to have him, because I think that would be amazing, but also there are better options out there. Don't ask me to name any off my head now, because I couldn't do that for you.
I was thinking, like, for example, 50 million is a lot, and this summer is going to be really interesting because many clubs have to buy a lot of players. Manchester City will need four or five. Arsenal's going to need two or three relatively big signs. Liverpool could need four or five. Manchester United need 11. So you've got all these big teams but they all can't be spending $500 million. So they're going to have to get creative, and it's, like you say, it's where they get creative. Someone I actually thought, what's his name, from Wolves, João, he's the Brazilian, Brazilian centre defensive mid from Wolves, Andre is his name, and yes, he's had a good season, and he probably would cost in the region of 25 to 30 to 35 mil, say. So, you know, it's either you're going to have to buy young and inexperienced players. I actually think it's a good opportunity for you guys just to move Lewis Skelly into that centre mid position and let him just have at it next to Rice. I think that's probably the play there.
From kind of what's been, you know, rumoured and everything, it seems that Arteta's definitely keen in getting a defensive midfielder, a kind of more of a six, so Rice can play that eight role, which I think is a shame almost, because I think Rice's best football has been when he's been playing in that six, just because he can effortlessly kind of cover that space on his own. He's just that good. So I think the kind of Lewis Skelly going into midfield would be very interesting. But that feels almost like you don't want that as your first choice, really, because he has been so good at left-back for us. And I don't doubt that he does end up playing in midfield at some point. But, yeah, I think not the end of the world to be missing out on him. And we just need to prioritise our money in the right ways. Because, again, I don't know how much money we're actually going to have. You know, there's a difference between how much money we're going to spend or want to spend and how much we're going to have.
Money will be there for you guys because, like you say, big contracts, people are going to be leaving on big contracts. You're going to be freeing up that wage. Opportunity to then buy younger players, bring them in. It's almost it's that fine blend, isn't it? Like, we've got Eriksen will be leaving, Lindelof will be leaving. You know, it's whether you go really young to replace them or you go for someone who's maybe 30, 31 and replicate the experience. It'll be interesting, like I say, to see what all the other clubs are going to be doing this summer in terms of managing that balance between financial fair play and also having to bring in four, five, six different players. So
exactly.
Yeah, it'll be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think so. But, okay, moving on from that then. I know you wanted to touch on quickly. I believe Juventus have had some news shake them this week. Do you want to tell the world about that?
Yes, Juventus have this week sacked their ex-manager, Thiago Motta, ex-Bologna manager, who they brought in at the start of the season for a very large sum and had very high hopes for. Very much a manager they brought in, anticipating that he would be the manager for the next 6 years. He followed Max Allegri, and frankly, everyone was tired of Max Allegri over at Juventus and his diabolical style of football, and thought Thiago Motta would breathe new life. and they completely restructured the squad. They got rid of Federico Chiesa. They obviously sold him to Liverpool, and they sold Moise Keane to Fiorentina in the summer as well, who has actually, I think he's the second top goal scorer in Serie A, and they completely rejigged the squad in the hope to blending it towards the style of play that Thiago Motta wanted to bring in. And actually, it's been nothing but an absolute unmitigated disaster for them. I think they were unbeaten in the league. It's crazy, Juventus this season. They were unbeaten in the league for until, I want to say, February or January. But they actually had just drawn every game. They had more draws.
Go on, sorry.
They had more draws than victories and were just languishing in, like, fifth, sixth, fourth. Maybe they were getting close at one point, but then everyone else drew away from them. So Juventus have made the very strong executive decision to sack Thiago Motta and have brought in Igor Tudor, ex-Marseille.
What a name.
Absolutely. Really interesting hire, because he isn't someone who has had an extraordinary managerial career, but he's someone who's been fairly consistent. He's had odd jobs in random leagues, and obviously I think he did a pretty good job with the Marseille team, but he's not done anything outstanding. But obviously they evaluated their options, decided this is their guy. One of the things he apparently is quite keen on is to build the squad around their very expensive £80 million Dusan Vlahovic up top, because Thiago Motta was not particularly bothered about Dusan Vlahovic. They obviously brought in Kolo Muani in January, and I think that just pushed him further away from the starting 11, which is just, firstly, it's a depreciating asset, because if you want to sell him, he's not playing, and that's not helping. And secondly, he's on huge wages, and no one's happy when you're your most expensive striker and huge wages, not playing and not scoring. So I think they've looked at it, and they've just got such a strange squad in certain places. I think they got Cambiasso. Manchester City were interested in Cambiasso in January. I think they were willing to pay 60, 70 million for him. Haven't watched enough of him to say whether he's fantastic or not. But they've got Gatti. I think he became a much better centre-back under Thiago Motta. But then they've also got Weston McKennie, who actually was probably one of the few players who enjoyed playing under Thiago Motta. So it was a really mixed bag. And then obviously going out of the Champions League to the Dutch team, PSV Eindhoven, that they've gone out to?
Because then obviously they've been UV, that's just how bad they were, because also battered
them. And I think that really shocked their system. And then obviously going out Champions League and then falling further behind in the league and sitting where they were, thinking, oh gosh, we might not actually get Champions League football. They were just like, we need a quick contingency plan, and they decided to get rid of it, which is, I just think, really interesting, because it really does highlight the overall picture of top five European league football, in that everyone loves the idea of a project manager. Yes, let's bring in this up and coming coach, let's give him the keys, let's give him everything he needs so he succeeds and builds a dynasty. And then ultimately, you're one Champions League exit and a bit of a poor form in the league away from just getting sacked. And then his name's tarnished now. He'll probably have to go back to a similar level role that he had at Bologna, for example, a team akin to a Bologna, because he's obviously gone to Juventus and failed. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether, apparently they might sack their sporting director as well, because they're not happy with what he's done. Messing around with the squad, and the squad looks imbalanced, and so I just thought it was an interesting point to touch on, because sucks to suck.
No, I think
and
so.
Thiago
well,
Motta did suck.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think it's very interesting, because obviously you look at Juventus kind of 10, 12 years ago, they were number one in Serie A, and they were winning league titles year in, year out, and then kind of ever since the end of that era, basically, just slowly got worse and worse. And now you're into Milan's, and Napoli and AC Milan had their moment. They've been a bit average this year, I think, running on. But look at Serie A now, so they've got 13 wins and 13 draws this season.
Insane.
And 3 losses, which is ridiculous, really. Really interesting, because I do remember, just on the back of that PSV result, seeing it was a certain guy I see on TikTok occasionally who is a Juventus fan, just being like, this is how bad we are at the moment. And how much they have struggled. So it sounds, I'm not going to pretend that I've followed the Serie A particularly closely. but
I think everyone was so ready to move on from Max Allegri, and they brought someone in who actually made it worse, and I don't think many Juventus fans thought that could happen, but I think they really struggled with Motta. And in a time when Serie A is so competitive, if you look at the top of the league table, you know, for a large part of the season, there's four or five teams. I think obviously now it's narrowed down between Napoli and Inter. But, you know, Juventus were never really in the mix because they were just playing such dull football, drawing every game. And you're right, it's a massive fall from grace from where they were at 10, 12 years ago. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I agree. All right, thank you for European correspondent Taylor that we had there. But going back to the proper, you know, the best league in the world, the best type of football. Club football does return this week.
Yes.
Thank God for that. Like we said last week, though, neither of our clubs are playing. As it is FA Cup weekend, and also there's some interesting championship games as well, which, I mean, at the very least, I'm somewhat interested in, because I do enjoy watching the championship. But we've got this weekend, on Saturday, it's Fulham Palace and then Brighton playing Forest. And on the Sunday, we've got Preston playing Villa and Bournemouth playing City. So, big games there for the quarterfinals. And, you know, as we've said before, but it's a really good opportunity for a club, not City, to get their first trophy in however long it's been. You know, look at Villa there, I think, have a really good opportunity. Bournemouth have a really good opportunity. Fulham Palace, I think, is going to be really interesting. Forest Brighton, I think the games are actually quite exciting. And it's good that there aren't these massive, you know, your boring Liverpools. I mean, we're gonna, you know, Arsenal do have the most FA Cups in history, but we're not exactly been challenging in recent years. If you had to pick from those clubs, Taylor, kind of looking at this weekend, let's not say City, because that's a boring response. Who would you peg to go on and win it?
I'd really like Nottingham Forest, I feel like would be quite fun. I think that'd be what a season they would have if they were to get like top four and win.
Oh my God, can you imagine that? Yeah.
That'd be crazy, wouldn't it? It would really throw the whole, what everyone thinks they know about football, out the window. So I think that'd be really interesting. I like Brian's project as well. You know, all their data, all their stats, their nerd stuff that they're on. I really hate it. So if they were to do it, it's like ultimate vindication for the project. Not that they need vindication, because Chelsea keep paying them in vindication because they keep signing players for like 100 million. So, you know, not that they need it. But, yeah, I think one of those two for me would do it. How about yourself? What do you think?
I mean, I think that's very fair. I mean, obviously, they're playing each other as well on the Saturday at 5:15. So that could be interesting. I've always had a soft spot for Palace. I don't know why.
Because Eddie Nketiah plays in the mud.
Yeah, I know. I used to career most of them on football on FIFA back in the day. Same with Bournemouth, but for some reason I've always had a soft spot for Palace. So I really like their team at the moment, and they are, you know, I think I've seen a lot of Palace fans say, but they are third in points taken this season from January, I believe. It's just behind Liverpool and Arsenal, I'm pretty sure. So they've had a really good kind of second half of the season. And I've just loved Mateta, and obviously I love Nketiah. Henderson.
Oh, one sec, Cormac. We got a shout out. Tucked in shirt, post ear surgery, Mateta.
Oh,
it could be.
We're going to get the most Barclaysman in year. He's going to be.
This could be game changing. He might just hit 50 goals by the end of the season. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
Long sleeves, gloves on. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, gloves on going into April. Very fresh.
You know what? If Mateta scores the FA Cup winning goal, hell yeah.
Absolutely.
Before he moves to Manchester United. Crazy.
For 150 million, then he'd loan him off to Chelsea.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's very, very, very exciting. I'm looking forward to just club football being back.
Anything else you have to say, don't we? No, I agree. Super great to see teams which you wouldn't associate with this. Again, shout out Preston for getting where they're at. You know,
got further than
Manchester United, Arsenal, Liverpool, etc. So great. Nice to see a good mix of teams. And you just really hope that Manchester City don't go on to win it, because that would be really annoying. And
so
really,
boring.
Really not, just not it. So let's just hope.
I mean, if
they're playing Bournemouth.
I think that'll be a really tough game for them. I really do think.
Agreed. Is it Bournemouth at home, or is it City?
Bournemouth at home.
Yeah, so that could be really interesting. And then,
do you want to give a quick quick predictions on those games then? You don't have to do scores, you can just do... So we've got Fulham versus Palace.
I'm going to go for Palace to go through. I'm going to go for a... I don't know if Mateta's playing, but I'm just going to say a Mateta goal.
Nice, all right. I'm going to say Palace as well. Sorry, I don't know if James is listening, but sorry, James, get fucked. I'm going to say 2-0 to Palace on that one. Then we've got Brighton Forest. I think it will be 2-1 to Forest is what I'm going to go for there.
Alright, I'm going to count. Yeah, I'm going to counter you, and I'm going to go for a Brighton victory. This just goes straight to extra time. There's no replays, is there?
I believe so. If the contest ends with a draw, they'll be decided. Yeah, extra time and penalties. Oh wait, no, hang on. Yeah. I think it is two legs
for the quarters.
That's stupid.
Semis are two legs, not quarters.
Oh no, sorry, replays. Sorry, that is. That's a replay. Sorry, if it's a draw, it goes to replay. If not, it's...
Stinks, man. Big, yeah. But before we carry on with our predictions, by the way, Nations League, quarterfinals, two legs, and then if it draws at the end of it, a full extra time before they get to penalty. Who cares? These players are away on international break and they have to play Bruno Fernandes.
I know.
The poor man. Had to play... two legs and then extra time, or despite being the most overused player on the world. I was just like, boom!
We'll say it again. If there's one message out of this podcast could put out to the world, is fuck extra time off.
Out of here, man. Just get rid of it. No one gets straight to penalties, like we said. Just straight to penalties every time.
Straight to penalties.
So, all right. Next prediction. Well, I've gone for Brian. I'm not giving any more details. But
no, that's all you need to do. Preston Villa at Preston.
I'm going to go for Preston.
Yeah, me too. Just for the fun of it, really.
Just for the fun.
We've pissed off enough Villa fans over the last few days.
Esri Conn's our own goal.
Yeah. If you guys don't check, if you haven't anyway, check us out on TikTok, Red and White Chalkboard. We're just down with the kids like that. We clipped up the bit where we mentioned that we weren't going to take concert, and we were kind of pretty fence city about it. But I think now I could. That video, this is our most viewed video we have on TikTok, and I think it has close to as many comments as it does likes, which tells you kind of about people's reaction to it. And to be fair to them, most of them are quite sensible takes. Like,
I don't disagree either.
But you would think we told them to, you know, kill their own mothers. So, sorry, Villa fans. You're right. We'll take concert. Yeah. All right, then. And then... we're both impressed on that. And then Bournemouth versus City. That's the most interesting one, I think, of the weekend.
Yeah, Bournemouth. I'm never going to pick a Man City win.
Yeah, fuck it. I'll go Bournemouth as well then. That's all quite a boring there. I think we've agreed on every single one. God, nothing nice. Like a podcast where everyone constantly agrees. And then after that, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, Premier League football is back, baby.
Yes.
We'll get another episode out for you guys before that, because it is... Merseyside derby on the Wednesday. Arsenal and Man United, I think, are both playing on the Tuesday. United are playing Forest. Arsenal are playing Fulham. We'll probably lose, and so will United. So that'll be good stuff. But we'll get an episode out before those games. That's everything from me today. Taylor, have you got anything else to add there at the end? Anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's it, man. We did it. We made it through the international break. We're through the other side. Club football hath returned. We can finally rest in peace. Final push for the end of the season. Let's just hope for good football, good results, good vibes. And a Liverpool downfall. And we'll be here every step of the way to tell you all about it.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks again for listening again, guys. Please subscribe, rate, and all that stuff. That really helps us. Share with your mates. Check us out on TikTok. Check us out on YouTube. Check us out on Twitter. It's all Red and White Chalkboard in some variation or other. They'll be linked as well wherever you're watching this. But an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll catch you in the next one.